This is CliffCentral.com.
This is the Gareth Cliff Show. I'm Siya Sangwen in here with Sis Pumi, soon to be promoted and graduated to Aunt Pumi because it's her birthday next
Auntie Pumi.
And also Canton Pele. Canton, how are you doing?
I'm awesome, as usual.
As usual.
I was you know, quite disturbed listening to all the talk about empathy coming in this morning.
And because your EQ level stands at a?
I have no EQ.
Zero. 0.0.
Zero EQ.
That's why...
Yes, I've got a box of tissues, though, if that'll help.
That's why Canton needs me in his life.
Just someone to help in all of this. Yeah, just maybe. So in the next hour, we'll be discussing some of the big political happenings that have occurred over the last week. Look, there's a lot been going on here, then, everywhere, and including an article, just to kick things off, that we were discussing a lot this week, and especially since it's an investigative piece from Amapungan, and we know Amapungan is an organization that really goes into telling a lot of layered stories. So just by the headline itself, it's something that stops you a bit and makes you go, well, what is going on here? And it is around the Ekurhuleni municipality spending 1.9 billion rands on a toilet tender. This is all from chemical toilets over three financial years, from 2017 to 2019. The article was written by Tabelo Timse, and he is on the line this morning just to chat to us more about it and to also give us some more insight into the investigation that took place here. So, Tabelo, thank you so much for making some time out to chat to us this morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
Awesome. So I just want to unpack what went into this investigation and the article that you laid out in the Daily Maverick. But just first and foremost, can you set the scene for us in terms of what is exactly going on back in 2017 when it comes to the Ekurhuleni municipality and this toilet tender?
All right. So, according to my investigation, back in 2016, when actually this tender was advertised and awarded, is that it was firstly advertised and there were 16 companies that were awarded to supply chemical toilets to informal settlements at Ekurhuleni. And I think that's where the problem started in terms of the awarding itself. It was 16 companies, relatively unknown, and there were small companies with no capacity. So there were a lot of issues even then, according to the paperwork that I scrutinized, and I saw that most of these companies were small. They didn't have the capacity, as I said. And also, they did not have experience, you know, in terms of this kind of service to informal settlements. So there were a lot of questions there, you know, if I have to take you way back.
So I'd love to find out when the red flag started going up in something like this, because you're listing already some obvious facets that would make the layman just go, no, this is not a good idea. If it's small companies and they're being awarded these large sums of money, that's already asking for a problem. When did this start being an issue that people started being aware of?
Well, I mean, this issue came to my office, I think, at the beginning of the year. At first, it was a simple story. I wouldn't say, you know, no story is simple, but it was an issue that, you know, people were complaining about the toilets, you know, themselves. They were saying that the municipality is providing these chemical toilets and we would rather go back to the bucket system. So obviously that's like red flag number one. Why would you want to go back to like inhumane system, to the bucket system? So I started looking at this issue. And then later on, I think there were complaints as well about, you know, there were three women who came to me and said, you know, we don't like these toilets because as women, we don't like the chemicals. You know, when we sit on them and they're not properly cleaned. So in terms of like the hygienic issue, you know, they don't like it. So again, another red flag. So I started like looking deeper into this issue, and I was like, okay, so what is this contract? So I found out it's to provide chemical toilets to informal settlements. So the companies had to hire or provide the chemical toilets. They had to service them twice a week. At the beginning of the contract, so the suppliers had to supply one toilet for 10 families, and then they had to service them once a week. And then later on, I think in 2017, then that was changed. It was like, okay, you know, one toilet for five families and serviced twice a week. So I was like, oh, okay, let me just step back and find out more about who these companies are. And then in that process, there was a letter, an open letter that was circulated on social media. Mm-hmm. And when this letter came through, it highlighted Ekuruleni, what, suspicious contracts. And the letter was titled Large-Scale Looting at the City of Ekuruleni. And then the chemical toilets came up again. I mean, it's like a lot of contracts that I mentioned in that letter. But to me, what stood out, it was the chemical toilets. So I saw that this is becoming a big issue. And as time goes by, people are making a noise around it. So we decided, okay, let's start to properly investigate this issue. Let's start by looking at the paperwork. Let's look at the spec of the tender. What does the tender require? Mm. And even then I could see that, okay, it's like it's sort of open-ended. I mean, there was no set pricing in terms of what the supplier could charge. You know, there was no set of standards in terms of what the chemicals the suppliers could use. So again, I saw some loopholes there within the spec itself. And then obviously then you, as a journalist, you would go to the community and just speak to them, because at the end of the day, they are the users of the service. And then that's where I went to several informal settlements around the Ekuruleni just to ask. So literally I just, yeah, I took my car one day, and then I would stop at an informal settlement where I saw these chemical toilets, and I would ask people, I mean, how do you feel about it? Do you use it often? What is the issue with you? And then that's when a lot of complaints started coming through about, you know, regarding this. So that's like the basic steps in terms of my investigation.
Tabelo, it's Pumi. I read your article with much interest. And I wondered, mm-hmm. because I didn't see it in your article anywhere, just about when you, being a specialist investigator, I would think that this is one of the things that you do. When you benchmarked this, you know, when I read the 1.9 billion, I was blown away at that amount of money. But then I wondered, and I didn't see it anywhere in your article, what kind of prices do other municipalities pay for these kinds of toilets?
Hi, Tabella, this is Canton, and I'm going to climb in at this point. I'm just going to be just straight up front of here, and I think that this is a non-story. And here's why. This is a non-story. Okay, if you look in terms of the figures that you've provided in terms of your story right now, and you say that for the most recent financial year, which is the 2018-2019, they spent 758 million rand, providing 39,112 chemical toilets. And if you divide that, it works out to roughly 19,000 rand per toilet per year. Now, the assumption that these toilets are being serviced on a weekly basis, that is the cost of 372 rand per week to provide a toilet for 10 families. Now, that to me sounds extremely reasonable.
The question
becomes, if the work is being done, then it's a different story. If the work is not being done, that's a different story. But the point that I'm trying to get at is that the idea of the amount of money that is being spent relative to the service that's being provided is not excessive. So why, you know, the emphasis on the tender process itself rather than the non-delivery of services, which for me is the issue. And I think that the obsession around the actual amount of money that's being spent makes absolutely no sense in this particular story.
Okay.
372 rand a week for providing a toilet for 10 families, I think is extremely reasonable.
No, but I'm
incorrect. Well, I mean, according, okay, I chipped in.
No, that's
when someone was talking.
No, I think that for what Canton is saying, my interest is how much do other municipalities pay? So in the Western Cape, in the Western Cape, for instance, at Kayamnandi, how much is the DA paying for toilets in those informal settlements?
Sure. I mean, I didn't mention it in my article because that was not my focus. My focus was that people came to me with complaints, and it was my duty as a journalist, first of all, to just look into these complaints, whether they were warranted. And it's not just complaints from people that came to me, but, you know, as I said, it was letters that were circulated on social media pointing fingers at certain individuals. So that's where I started to look at this issue, to say, are we getting value for money? I mean, if you're paying an amount for a service, you would expect that kind of service.
No, we absolutely understand that. That is not what we have an issue with, at least not me. I'm simply saying it's difficult to understand what value for money is if you don't have a comparison. So if you don't know what other people are paying, it's easy to manufacture outrage around what a particular person is paying when you have no context. So when you have no context, and when I first read the article, I mean, and I said to Sia, I felt like it was clickbait. It says 1.9 billion rand, you know, whole scale looting. And then you see that it's 39,000 toilets over a period of 3 years. Suddenly it kind of, you know, it diminishes it completely. But also to not have an investigative journalism, you know, is something that for me is about looking at the big picture and then honing in into a particular problem. But if you're unable to say that other people in comparison are paying 200 rand a week and here they are paying 500 rand a week, then you don't have the context to be able to be this outraged about it.
All right. I mean, the outrage is coming from the public. My job or my issue was to tell, you know, what was happening out there. And also it's not me alone saying that, you know, this contract, there were various problems with it. I mean, there were other studies that were done on this particular project by other NGOs, such as like Plan Act, that did a sanitation social audit on this and found that there were a lot of issues around this contract and around the service delivery itself. My, as I said, I will repeat, is the service delivery itself. Even if you are paying 1 rand or 2 rand for a service, people deserve a decent service.
Yeah, but at 1 rand, the kind of decency then becomes a...
I mean, not 1 rand, obviously, but...
But yeah,
I'm just saying.
Yeah, no, but
if you're paying for a product, that's what you expect.
So but it must be like benchmarked.
Chemical toilets and an informal settlement, it doesn't mean like you do not service that twice a week as you are expected.
Tabelo, just one last question.
And yet you are paying and then you are invoicing for that service.
Tabelo.
And it doesn't help for you to invoice for a toilet that is non-existent, because I think in the investigation and in the story I mentioned that there was a lack of municipal oversight in general over this project. So again, it's not about the money, but it's also about the service delivery.
Tabelo, just one last question before we let you go, and I understand you do have another interview. You guys at Amabunga, and then over the past couple of days, there's been quite a lot of stuff around journalism and kind of where we are manufacturing outrage, or where we are concentrating what we are going to be outraged about. I'm quite interested to know, you mentioned the fact that there are 16 service providers here. Who normally would provide this type of service? So who is in that industry? Who's the well-known players in that industry that you feel haven't been given the opportunity in, and instead it's been given to these unknown companies? In your investigation, who did you find are the top players?
I don't like to mention companies in
but you
in
mentioned
them,
in your,
you know,
but
for you,
it's specific
whatever, but
for
I mean,
your
there
investigation.
Is, Bitverse, they is King's Hire. There are a lot. There are other companies that are given. I mean, that are big players in this space as well.
So you and also even, find it problematic, Tabelo. Can I ask this question, Tabelo? Hold on. I hear you don't want
up.
To. I heard you don't want to mention the company's names. But so the problem for you is that small companies were given an opportunity. And the amount of money
that is
being spent.
No, that's not
spent,
the problem.
It's not,
that's
the,
not
problem.
The problem.
That's
it
what
is,
your article
that
sounds like.
Small. Sorry?
That's what it sounds
it was
like.
Not,
when you
I
read the
don't
article.
Think, no, I have no issues with small companies being given an opportunity to do this, provided that the specs are adhered to, that the tender process, you know, is fair. There were 250 companies that were given, and I mean, even if you would look at those 250 companies and you look who they are and what capacity do they have, you would find, you know, that more or some of them deserved more. I mean, we have a PIAP application going on with regards to this process, to the actually awarding of this contract.
Right.
Because okay. You can, yeah, I mean, you can award, obviously, based on certain points, because, I mean, but the issue here is not the companies itself, is the process of awarding to these companies. We're not saying just because you are a small business that you deserve to, you know, cut corners when it comes to awarding. So that is not the issue here. The issue is the process. The issue is service delivery.
Right. And Tabelo, you did note that in the article, saying that on paper the criteria are stringent, but it remains to be seen whether the municipality will adhere to them and not repeat the mistakes of the past. So thank you so much for that. Thank you for your insights. We just thought this is something that is warranted and something to be discussed. So thank you for making some time to chat to us this
no
morning.
No problem.
Fantastic. Thank you
so much, Sam.
Alrighty. So yeah, I just think these are these hot button issues that can gain a lot of momentum if you don't unpack and truly discuss
I think
them.
That also a lot of us are not asking the right questions.
Mm-hmm.
See, the right questions in this case is, why are we putting down chemical toilets which are going to require ongoing servicing, as opposed to just putting down permanent structures that the communities can then take responsibility for themselves.
But you can see how easy it is for things to just steamroll into, okay, well, so much money is being spent, and that's the narrative that's, you know.
Because we keep trying to plug the holes, and we're never building permanent infrastructure, but it's money that's being poured down a sinkhole to fix short-term problems, and it doesn't actually manage to fix those short-term problems.
Mm-hmm.
But those are the real questions that we should be asking, rather than
manufacturing.
How are we actually doing urban planning? You know, how are we, if these informal settlements are there in the first place, you know, what should we be doing about ensuring that they don't actually then become permanent fixtures? Because then we're never going to get rid of them. And that does actually mean that the municipality has to take responsibility for ensuring that at the point at which these informal structures actually start popping up, you immediately move in and relocate people to spaces where the municipality is able to more adequately provide proper sanitation and facilities. But this actually requires that we do forward planning, which as a country we are pathetically poor at doing.
You know, when I read this article, I started out also from a very high position of, this is outrageous, and then went through it all, and at the end of it felt like, oh my God, you know, so Canton, you say non-story. At the end of it all, I felt so let down by what was sitting there, and I think we often talk about journalism and the state at which it's in, and funny enough, a couple of days ago, I was reading an article by Ted Koppel about how the state of journalism is basically in the toilet. And this over the past couple of days.
How ironic right now.
And this over the past couple of days. I mean, yesterday you saw the big story, kind of the trash journalism. That's
Marianne Tam. Yes. So we actually, this all broke while we were live on the show yesterday. So we discussed it a bit, but I thought, wow, she was quite on an agenda. How many bags of trash? 16, was it? That she had to go through and rummage all for that, and the crunching of the numbers of the booze.
Hey, Baba, there's no easy way to earn your bread these nowadays.
What's your take on the investigations as well?
Look, I think people do investigations that the way they do investigations. And I understand the people that are outraged and the reason they are outraged. But I think if you feel that outraged, then, you know, there really is a case to be made about the fact that some people are more targeted than other people.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, everybody that's a journalist is well within their right of deciding the view that they want to take and how they want to investigate that view and the angle that they want to give us of that view. So if you are unhappy about the fact that Marianne spent all of this time doing this investigation on the EFF and you feel that somebody should be paying time to doing an investigation like this on Gavin Watson, hey, guess what? If you're a journalist, you can do that too. You know, you can also do that.
Do you think, what do you think of the purpose of the investigation?
I think that the purpose of the investigation is to point out the hypocrisy on the part of the EFF, you know, who claim to be wanting to run the country in a way that actually addresses the needs of the poor.
And for the people.
And for the people.
Fighting together.
And look, frankly, I see nothing wrong whatsoever with staying in a bed and breakfast that is actually commensurate with the rates that Parliament actually approves.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, you know, buying, you know, booking out someone's guest house and then spending, frankly, outrageous amounts of money on booze. It is totally outrageous.
25,000 rands on booze.
Well, yes.
25,000 rands.
For how many people? For a weekend? And you're there for Parliament, really?
Are you there for Parliament or a party?
Yes.
So I heard there are the parties in Parliament. Before, after an address, those are quite parties.
Yes, and I think it's actually important that
it's like that,
we the voters understand exactly how our purported leaders end up living their lifestyles.
Mm.
Which is entirely different to the way in which we live our lifestyles. Feel free to go through my trash anytime, people, by the way.
Yeah, it's really, it really isn't going to be as interesting and ironic as all of
between
this.
Between you and Dudumbaweni and watching your timelines, there's a lot of cooking going on.
Yes, one with pilchards. The other.
I've been cooking on Twitter long before Tudumbaweni started. Let's be very clear.
So there you go. You are an influencer.
No, not an influencer. I just like cooking.
I just think that Marianne must have done such a happy dance when she discovered all of this, because this is sweet, sweet irony to go through all of this and you discover the. My thoughts when I saw the investigation was the same people who made the biggest hoopla over the H&M fiasco. Coolest monkey in the jungle. How dare you? We're going to trash the store. Never again. Protest and boycott the store. Here you are now with H&M receipts. Just that sweet irony.
I know, it's beautiful.
But see,
isn't
what
it?
Did I tell you about politicians? Politicians will always be consistent on this one. Politicians are about power. Politicians are about power.
You see, it breeds into this horrible cycle that we're in. You know, and politicians know how to feed this machine
don't
as well.
Use words like horrible. No. You know, you're getting emotional about this. Don't do that. Let's move on. Are we talking to Outer?
Yes. So this is something that has also been in the news recently. Of course, we know what has been happening with the eThekwini mayor. And now Outer, which is the organization undoing tax abuse, said just this week on Tuesday that it would, so they are planning to take legal action against the eThekwini municipality.
I wish people would just take legal action. You know, don't announce that you're going to take legal action. Just go and actually.
Why do you think it's a waste of time? The announcement first.
Yes, you know what people say is not news. What people do is news. Just go do it, and then we'll take a look at the court papers and see exactly what the allegations are.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can publish those things without fear of, you know, being part of a circle of defamation.
Of gossip mongering.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, Outa says that they'll take this legal action against the Etowah municipality if the municipality did not act against its graft against the accused mayor, Zandile Gumede. So we'll be chatting to Outa KZN provincial manager, Tim Tyrrell. I just think this is just the story that breeds on and on and on. And do you think, though, announcement aside, do you think this is something that is a good step for Arta to take and something that is necessary for the whole
I wouldn't know. I'd need to see the court papers and see, you know, what is the legal basis on which the application actually is being filed. But really, I wish people would just stop coming to media in general and saying, we are going to take court action. Go and take the flippant court action, please. You know, let's move on.
Sisipumi, what about you?
You see, we can, like Iqbal Surve has taken his moment. He's out there. He was like, defamation! And there he is, filed his court papers. I think that's one of the things that for me, I keep saying, and even though Kenton would mock me about it, people have to do stuff. I think South Africa is so caught up right now in all of this outrage, and we're out Twittering each other and out politicking each other over dinners and all sorts of things, and we're not doing anything. We're just so distracted by all of the smoke and mirrors around it. We need to do stuff. We need to... If you're going to take court action, Trevor Manuel, you know, put in the papers.
Mm.
Iqbal Surve, whether you like him or not, you put in the papers to say, hey, I feel defamed, and this, you know, and let the court take its course. So Outa, you have all of this information sitting in the public space. Put together a document and put it to the NPA. Put them to the test. We were speaking last week about Shamila Patohi and saying, you know, she had a press conference talking about the cost of state capture over the past and what the NPA is needing to rebuild. Give her an opportunity to sink her teeth into something and show us that she can rebuild this NPA.
Yeah. Well, just before we get Tim on the line, we have a message.
We're struggling to get Tim.
Yeah, just before we get him on the line, we have a message here around the earlier conversation we had around the Amabungan investigation with the toilet issue. So they also didn't leave their name. They just said, listening to this toilet issue, my son is a qualified hydrologist with a master's degree. He's a white male. He can assist with this issue, but he cannot get a job in South Africa because of the color of his skin. He's now leaving South Africa to teach English in China. She continues on to say, wake up, South Africa. You're losing all the skilled help to save these situations. It feels like we are regressing to the caveman's time, 25 years to supply hygienic systems to citizens, which is failure deluxe, they say. Per South Africa, my heart bleeds and cries daily by what I am seeing evolve with power and greed. That's from Katz, who just messaged us. Do you think something like this is warranted?
What do you mean something like this?
No, the point of regression and her perspective of seeing that, you know, South Africa's moving back to caveman's times.
South Africa's not moving back to caveman times. South Africa's not moving back to caveman times, and we're so emotional about things that really don't warrant to be emotional. That's one of the things that, for me, when I read this article, so, you know, is we're creating an emotionally charged environment over things because the context is incorrect, because it is more, we hope that it will sell more newspapers if we fear monger, right?
So who's we?
We.
Who's we?
Proverbial.
Who's we?
Proverbial we. If we fear monger, that's why you get an emotional response like Kat saying, my son can't get a job because of his skin color. That's not true.
Mm-hmm.
That's not true. But for her, at this moment, She's feeling like it's a universal truth. It's not.
Oh, stop it, Pumi. You are playing down her lived experience.
Ah.
Now, can we move on?
So just
today's stock market is the highest in the history of the United States, guys.
We have to talk about.
No, Catherine, stop. You're getting emotional. Let's move on.
We have to talk about post G20.
Oh,
cause,
yes.
Because last week we spoke a little bit about G20.
What would you like to do about G20?
Sia was just going on about the security to get into a party at the embassy, ambassador.
Yes. So resident, just imagine right? then.
And then to
what
wake
Osaka
up
was like last
to
week.
Wake up to the news of a surprise, an unplanned visit into the demilitarized zone. For how unplanned was that visit really, considering that so much security has to go into making sure that the US president shows up at the place when Donald Trump and his entourage, including his daughter, show up at the demilitarized zone to see.
This isn't someone just deciding
North
to go and
Korea.
Visit their grandmother. It's not just a surprise.
What do you make
visit.
Of that? What did you make of that, Kenton? The surprise visit.
Trump knows how to actually grab the PR opportunities, and he does it brilliantly. Well, you see, the question is, could Obama have done the same thing back then? Yeah, I think that Obama actually would, you know, have considered all of the optics in terms of what people would say about him shaking hands with I understand that Kim, little Kim, as we find a folly.
Why? Oh, is that the new?
Well, little did Kim, you not see how small
why
he is?
Did I not think of this earlier, actually?
He's been little Kim for a while, but I understand this guy is a ruthless thug. You know, he's been known to come up with all sorts of creative ways to execute people who fall foul of whatever edicts he's put in place. Mm-hmm. And we all know their reputation in terms of how they treat their populace and, you know, personal freedoms and all of that. So I think that the optics of that would not have gone down very well at all in terms of Obama or Clinton or even George W. Bush. But Trump, you know, he doesn't give it a fuck.
No, not at all. And I was saying,
is that an F-bomb?
Yes, it is an F-bomb. And I'm sorry. But,
I was saying this
Trump,
to you off-air. Yeah. Sorry to cut you off. I was saying this to you off-air. I think he loves that. He loves the fact that he's going to do all of this. And it's still after so many years, gearing up for what I do believe will be a second term.
It will be, without a doubt.
What will be a second term. It's still gone as such a response and a reaction from people, and that, I think, further fuels him.
Yes, very much so.
So he's loving this.
He's loving this. And of course, every time he does this, CNN and all of the rest of the American media, except for Fox, has a complete and utter meltdown.
Mm. And over what exactly? Just, you know, him chilling with his BFF Lil Kim now.
And then,
the term Lil Kim has stuck
yes,
with
but,
me.
But I guys, can't. You know, let's just talk about G20 for a second. Okay. And yes, you know, we spoke about G20 last week.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is that, you know, South Africa is a member of the G20 because the G20 was comprised of the top 20 economies in the world.
Mm-hmm.
By ranked by GDP.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the case anymore. Technically, we should not be part of the G20.
What makes you say that?
Because right
we've
now...
Fallen.
Because we've fallen. Because other countries have overtaken us. We're actually sitting at number 31 in the world right now, ranked by GDP.
Mm-hmm.
Because people have actually overtaken us. So if you look in terms of who's ahead of us, Argentina's ahead of us, Nigeria, Norway, United Arab Emirates, Austria, Thailand, Belgium, Sweden, Poland, Turkey, and Taiwan is actually sitting at number 20 right now in terms of GDP. So we're sitting at number 31, and we are going to drop even further because Israel is going to overtake us next year. Hong Kong will overtake us next year in terms of GDP. Understand that Hong Kong is an island that has zero resources, and they were screwed over by the British for exactly the same time as we were.
Mm.
And they've grown their economy from base zero. So we must actually recognize the reason why we are doing badly. It's got nothing to do with apartheid. It's got everything to do that with the fact that we have an incompetent government running this country. But we will not be in the the G20 for much longer, because sooner or later, you know, someone's going to get upset about the fact that South Africa is just there on the basis of, you know, just being, I don't know, sucking
almost
up everyone.
Legacy.
Well, yeah, but it's legacy. Legacy based on the fact that during the Mbeki era, we actually had an economy that was growing very strongly. And of course, now, thanks to the National Democratic Revolution, which Ramaphosa is still very firmly pushing, we're going to continue sinking. So, but we are sitting at number 31 in the world right now. But, and it's a disgrace.
Were you surprised that any of the kind of images coming out of the G20?
Because as soon as I...
When we see our beloved Tito Mboweni being BFFs with Putin.
Because I was just keeping tracks of it.
What's happening here?
Over the weekend, and I sent this picture to you as soon as I saw it, that stare down between President Putin and President Ramaphosa. I was like, what is going on?
No, guys, come on, understand that they are speaking with translators. So, you know, staring into the other person's eyes in that scenario in order to actually get a sense of what they're trying... Body language, what they're trying to convey.
Okay. Yeah,
we forget that it's not an Anglophone world out there.
So our president hailed the G20 as a success.
Yes, but our president is an idiot. We've been down this route before.
He'll be shocked to find out it wasn't.
Because I also saw then some talk around what was the takeaway from something like the G20. Because when it came to topics like, you know, keeping global trade open and free, a lot of the summit leaders were pinpointed as saying like, okay, well, you didn't really discuss it much, or you didn't really walk away with a takeaway from it. You know, do you think something like the G20 this year was able to have like a proper takeaway, you know, having all of these world leaders in a room over, you know, some time? Are we able to have some constructive ways forward?
Look, the proper takeaways are on the G20, and we mustn't forget how important this stuff is. As soon as you have a situation, for example, where there's a state visit, there's a sense of expectation that gets put around a state visit in terms of pressure for people to actually to be able to succeed. Whereas something like the G20, where you're able to have all of these sidebar meetings that take place between leaders without the pressure of having a specific agenda that would come out of a state visit. So it's actually possible that when you have a scenario where Trump sits down with Putin and Trump sits down with Xi, that you're actually able to have almost off-the-record discussions where you're able to suss out where you take things for the formal discussions. And those things are hugely important. Mm. But, of course, South Africa doesn't factor at all. We like, 0.2% of the world's GDP in terms of what we represent out there. So
that puts things into perspective.
Yeah, so it doesn't really matter whatever discussions Ramaphosa may have on the side. The crucial thing, which I said, was the fact that the most important discussions that took place was Russia, India, China going off into their own little trilateral discussion. And they're effectively planning the only opposition left to this monolith, that's the United States. Hmm. And that's the important stuff that's actually happening.
So what for you were some of the takeaways from G20?
The stuff that I did get to read about, mm-hmm. because also I have been feeling like South Africa is so bogged down at the big kind of fluffy stuff or hairy stuff, as it were, and we're not focusing on the practical day-to-day things that we should be getting right. So in my view, and I told you guys this last week, is that one of the things that I was spending a lot of my time kind of looking at and reading out about was what's happening here, what's happening in my space and in my economy. We spoke about when the state of the nation was going to be done, and this week we had the state of the province, particularly mm-hmm. for Gauteng. And that, for me, is the thing that I'm looking at, is I'm looking at what is our premier saying, and where are they concentrating, what are they doing, where should we be looking to do business? Where should we be looking to interact with and help our economy? I think that the G20 stuff is great news. I think the G20 stuff makes you great dinner party, you know, a dinner party guest. You can talk about all of these big things. But in reality, I think more and more South Africans, all of us, should be spending more time in the doing, more time in the looking at the practical things that are on the ground and doing stuff.
And the steps that we can take now.
And working. Because our economy is not going to build itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to build itself. We've got to be working. We've got to be looking at
who's
if
we?
There's a problem. Who's, we is you.
No,
me,
stop this we thing.
Me. You see,
why
Piki has got her
there,
hand up. Piki has got her hand up. We is you, Sia, me, every single person
you don't
that
feel
is
this
listening.
Collective.
People
I don't
that
feel
are
this
work.
Collective. No.
Kat sent us a message saying her son would rather go and teach English in Japan instead of going, you know, we have a yes initiative by the president. Hello, young son, you can put up your hand and say, how do I get involved as a young person in South Africa with the skills that I have? So at the moment, I cannot find the job that is my dream job.
Well, you can't because SATU will not allow you to
here.
Do so.
Dude, Yes for Youth. Yes for Youth is a program. Look it up. WES, right? Look it up, get involved, going to teach Japanese kids English. It serves us to think that we have no opportunities in this country. It serves us to think that the country is going back to caveman days. It's rubbish. People are just so, what's your word, Kenton? Lived experience. People are so up in their heads and navel gazing, they're not looking up to say, how can I be part of
you
the solution
what, you,
in this
you see what I was saying earlier, this is sounding like Socialist Central.
Candid, if this sounds a little too hugely optimistic.
No, let's sing Kumbaya while we're at it.
Wait, what's your practical approach then to
solving
what we can all do right now?
Who's this we again?
You.
Okay.
What is
okay,
your
the world is divided. The world is divided into two types of people: those who will buy me lunch and those who will not. It's really that simple, okay? And I care about those. I care about those who will buy me lunch. So let's, you know, put this idea of we behind, okay? Everything starts with actually saying, what's the thing that I can do to provide for my family and to ensure that I'm building generational wealth? That's what each and every one of us should be doing as individuals. And it starts with us. It doesn't start with this amorphous
this
idea.
As in us?
Yes, us as in the family. It doesn't start with this amorphous idea about caring for the masses out there. It actually starts with saying, what is the best possible thing that I can be doing for my family? And crucially, from my point of view, what's the best thing I can do for my children is to equip them with global skills so that they can actually find employment anywhere in the world and they can end up getting paid the best amount of money with the best lifestyle that they can actually have. And there's nothing that should be tying them to this country. This whole idea that we somehow owe it to the great unwashed in this country that we should be sacrificing our skill set in order to provide latrines for them instead of actually going across to Japan or to Thailand or wherever, earning money in real currency that's then able where you're then able to actually further your education in a way that you can pay for it without waiting for fees must fall and handouts. We've got to stop this entire idea that of saying that it's our duty to care for people in this country who breed uncontrollably, for one. And we then expect to provide child support grants to pay for them. Can we have real conversations about stuff like this?
So not to put words into her mouth, but just for me, correct me where I'm wrong. But what I'm hearing you say, it isn't a geographical thing. Really, if you go up and you go and work elsewhere, sure, good for you. But I think it's more, and it's not a world and union, let's wave the flag and let's be amazing. But it is, we are here. We are in this country right now.
But we are here.
We are facing the issues that we're facing.
Those of us who are here.
What are
those of us who are here.
Issues?
Those of us who are here are here because we choose to be here. Mm-hmm. I mean, frankly, I'm in this country because I choose to be here and have no intention of going anywhere else. But do I want my children to have the opportunity to be able to go anywhere in the world and do whatever they want to anywhere in the world? Absolutely. That's where we should be setting our goals.
Right.
And what are we doing to equip our children, each and every one of us, in order to ensure that those are the opportunities that are available for them? We are not going to get those opportunities by going for we for work or whatever they want to call this thing for me.
No,
it's going to come about by us actually telling our kids, take advantage of the fact that you can acquire real skills that are marketable anywhere else in the rest of the world, and then go out and take advantage of them. Because if you look in terms of what we earn right now as South Africans, mm-hmm. just in terms of depreciation of the rand, okay, we have, all of us as an entire nation, taken effectively a 50% cut in salary since Jacob Zuma became president, in real money.
So what you and I absolutely agree upon is the fact that we should be taking advantage of what is available to us. So what I am saying is that what we should be looking out for is we should be looking out at what opportunities are there, mm-hmm. what kind of spaces, you know, this is strategy 101, like career planning, right? There is absolutely no point in looking at a career in something that no longer exists. When you're looking at careers today, is you're looking at what does the future look like and what kind of jobs are the future, is the future going to be looking for, right? Similarly, when you are a young person in Gauteng today, when you are a business person, an entrepreneur in Gauteng today, it makes absolutely no sense to not look at what it is that the government is saying is going to be their priority areas, because those priority areas are going to be concentric circles. Those are the areas where services are going to be needed. Those are the areas where people are going to be looking for employment, if you're looking for employment, if you're starting a business. Those are the areas that you should be looking at, and kind of sitting back and hoping to, you know, see something happen and just starting a thing on your own in a particular environment is not going to particularly be a very successful thing to do. It's impossible for you to look outside of what is happening for success. You need to be looking at where there is traction taking place already. What that means is it means that they're going to be, the government is prioritizing these areas. They're going to be looking for service providers. They're going to be looking for skills in those areas. These are the places
they
where
can
you
keep
should
looking.
Be looking.
No, they can look for service providers, but they will have no money to pay for those services. And that's the point that we need to get our heads around. This whole outrageous idea of providing for the service economy, it's idiotic. Everyone was dissing Trump at the point at which he said he's going to bring manufacturing jobs back into the U.S., and he did. There's been close to a 400% increase in manufacturing jobs that have gone back to the U.S. ever since Trump became president. And the crucial thing about what he's doing there is actually recognizing that you can't have an economy that's based on service, because something has to generate revenue in order for you to be able to pay for those services.
But the Gauteng government is saying to you that we are prioritizing automotive manufacturing. So if you are in the space of engineering, for instance, manufacturing space, there is already a priority. There is activity happening. There is, you know, Ford has got new plants coming up, Roslyn is booming. All I'm saying is that you have got to look to see what is happening where and plug yourself into those places.
You understand perfectly that the car manufacturing industry as we currently know it will probably cease to exist within the space of 20 years, because electric cars will actually take over from them. Self-driving cars will take over from them. The idea of having individual transport vehicles like we currently have right now, the world is changing, guys. Well,
the world is changing, but today, the world is what it is.
But you are telling me
today,
now,
the world is
if you
what
want
it is.
Me to tell my child to plan for a career in the automotive industry that will not exist in 20 years' time.
I did not say tell your child to plan. I said you as a business person, you as an individual who is trying to be economically viable in Gauteng, in South Africa today, mm-hmm. need to align yourself to where the activity is. today. Planning for your children and the future is what you do with the income. That 50% reduced income you have today.
Okay,
that's what
Pupi,
you plan
give, give me a specific example of how.
I just had a whole example about Roslyn.
The Roslyn, for example. What would you advise people in terms of what type of career they could build around Roslyn?
If you are in engineering.
No, it's, that job's already taken because the designs get done in Germany.
Dude, I'm not talking about design engineering. I'm talking about the fact that there is a plant in Roslyn today looking for additional people.
Yes, those plants are built in Germany.
So find out what they're looking for.
Those plants are built in Germany.
But who, and so all the people that work there work in Germany.
The assembly lines are built in Germany. The only people that work in those plants are assembly line workers. And the reason why we have those assembly line jobs coming out here is because of the fact that if you base it on a rand dollar exchange rate, our assembly line workers still end up being incredibly inexpensive. So even though
they are looking for assembly line workers, but those are
entry level workers, and those are careers that have no future.
We're
those people
about
who work those assembly lines will not have jobs
in
20 years' time because robotics will replace them.
We are talking about where do you start? Where do you start? And where you start is by looking at what the priority areas are.
I think
and
the priority areas are teaching English
areas.
In Thailand so yeah, that yeah, at least you yeah, can get yeah. out of the country.
I want to call you Canton Crunching Numbers Pele this morning. You're just on this whole tip of all these numbers. Listen, I just want to, before we wrap up, we have Tim Terrell from Out on the Line. Do you want to just quickly chat to him around his plans and what Out in KZN is planning around the Etegwini municipality and possible legal action? Tim, thank you so much for making time to chat to us this morning.
Morning, sir. How are you?
Great, thank you. Tim, just very briefly, can you bring us into the space of explaining what the legal action Outer might possibly lay out and take against the Etegwini municipality might be?
All right, thank you. We have to be a little cautious here, and it's probably not productive to speculate. Our actions will be determined entirely on what happens over the next few days. Mayor Gumede has been placed on special leave for 30 days, and that period expires during the course of next week. After that, we're not sure how the council will go. We have appealed to the executive committee of the municipal council to exercise their oversight role and to investigate the matter thoroughly and perhaps place it before the ethics committee. What happens thereafter will determine how we act, but we reserve the right to step into the legal space and to compel or whatever certain people to take action.
Okay, and then what are the plans so far that ALTA has taken towards this?
Well, we have engaged with the speaker, which went back to, I think it was the 21st of May. We had a response from him, which took a neutral position and suggested that the municipality was not prepared or ready to engage with us. So effectively, the door was shut. We've then taken it a step further, which has caused us to be somewhat more assertive. We've issued a letter to the executive committee, shall we say, urging them to take action and to behave as they should. And then there was also a statement that followed that, but followed much the same line, but that was released in the public domain. Mm. We are planning to take it further. We're certainly not stopping here. But what we actually do in terms of legal action remains to be crafted, and we will take advice from council on that one.
Tim, what is it that you want to see? It sounds here to me like you are saying there's a specific action that we are looking to see you take, and if you don't take that particular action, we're going to blackmail you with the threat of legal state.
Action.
What is it that you want to see?
Well, what we want is proper professional leadership. We have a very awkward and a very unfortunate situation here. Let me take you back to a statement which was issued by the Provincial Executive Committee of the ANC in March, which said very clearly that senior ANC officials who are implicated in criminal wrongdoing should step aside while the legal process surrounding their respective cases takes its course. We have a mayor surrounded by controversy, but we don't want to speculate in that space. leading up to her appearance in court some weeks ago, there was an investigation by the Internal Integrity and Investigations Unit, which in turn led to an investigation by the Hawks. The Hawks then came up with a charge sheet, which have enumerated five criminal charges, which are very clear and very specific, based on substantiated information. And she has been charged. She was released on bail of 50,000 rand. So the situation is this. We have a mayor who is criminally implicated, not necessarily found guilty, but while that process is underway, we are asking her and the municipal council to remove her from the picture, because it is just untenable that somebody with that kind of aura hanging over their head can be in charge of a city which drives a 50.6 billion rand budget.
Hmm. Yeah, and she has been moved aside. She's currently on special leave.
She is indeed, but that leave expires during the course of next week, and we're all waiting with eager anticipation to see what happens next.
So why then? But the point is, why then make all this hoo-ha? Why are you getting us all riled up and worked up about something that may or may not be?
Well, this is a deeply moral issue. We have leadership which has been very seriously tainted. I guess one could say there's no smoke without fire, but I'm not making any direct accusations. But until such time as the mayor's name is cleared, the city stumbles and struggles with leadership which is very severely compromised. The bail conditions surrounding Mayor Gumede's court case exclude her from making contact with certain key operational functions within the council. So immediately, just in terms of the bail conditions, it's very clear that the mayor can't do her job properly. So we're saying, please step aside, let the city function as best it can under difficult circumstances, and if and when you're cleared, return to your job and carry on. But if you're found guilty thereafter, then obviously we need to replace you.
Okay. So, Tim, thank you so much then for explaining that. That's something we'll be keeping our eyes on, and we count down to see whether she is coming back or not. And this is something that we'll definitely continue chatting about. So, Tim Tyrrell, the Outer KZN Provincial Manager, thank you for chatting to us this morning.
Thank you, Siya.
And for me, thank you. Happy birthday for a couple of days' time.
Yay!
I hope you have a party and a half. And listen, there were a lot of heavy conversations happening this morning. And Canton, thank you as well. This is really, really awesome. This is The Burning Platform right on the Gareth Cliff Show on cliffcentral.com. And let me just remind you, by the way, as we wrap the show up. Now, as Bitcoin and cryptocurrency in general continue to evolve, Beyond Bitcoin brings you the rise and fall of crypto prices. So what to understand about the surges, the long-term view on the opportunities, and how Revex, a partner of ours, is geared to helping you make the most of these markets. So download the podcast now on cliffcentral.com. And plus, by the way, buy any crypto bundles on Revex in July and they will guarantee your investment for an entire month. If you haven't gotten into the crypto world, this is really the time to start. So sign up and use a promo code RISKFREE. That's all caps and one word, RISKFREE, to guarantee your investment. So terms and conditions do apply, but go to revex.com for more information. Until tomorrow morning, when Ben and Leanne are joining me in studio, this has been the Gareth Cliff Show. Thank you so much for having us on.
This is cliffcentral.com.